Hi, and welcome to Ask an Atheist, a weekly educational call-in program dedicated to atheism, skeptical inquiry, and the separation of church and state. We air live from ScanTV in Seattle every Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific time, and our program is archived online at www.askanatheist.tv. My name is Casey Dorn, and with me, my Chewbacca to my Han Solo, Mike Gillis.
Hey, how's it going, Casey?
How's it going, Mike?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
How good is pretty good?
Moderately ditto.
Okay.
Or neato.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Well, we've got a lot of, we've got a good topic today, actually. I think this might be our most offending topic that we've ever done on the show here. In your face topic.
Well, we're young yet.
Yeah.
So.
I think first and foremost, we should get all the announcements out of the way and whatnot. After the show today, instead of going to the RAM like we normally would, we're back-to-back against the Seattle Atheist July membership meeting, which is today at 5 p.m. at the Stone Soup Theater, which is at 4035 North Stone Way. And the actually, I really want to see this. The speaker is Harry Gilbert, who is a science writer, a former science teacher, and a former rocket engineer. So if you ever want to talk to a rocket scientist, we're going to get the chance. And this is going to be on dark matter in the universe. So maybe it's a little geeky, a little nerdy necessarily. And I don't know if dark matter relates to atheism, except that maybe dark energy is what fuels people's spiritualism. I don't know.
I don't know. I just thought it was nonsense.
So that's where we're going to be after the show instead of going to the RAM. So if you guys are in the area, if you want to come out to a good talk, and you can meet us and the rest of the members of the Seattle Atheists organization, come on out.
Definitely.
Yeah. So we've got a couple other announcements. First and foremost, I wanted to give props to the Freethinkers United Network Meetup, which is basically a grouping of atheists, freethinkers, skeptics, people like yourself, who get together on the first and third Fridays, I think, for dinners with discussion. And they're also, this is all cross-marketed with our own show. So I guess the Freethinkers United Network also, they get reminders to watch our show too, so we're going to pimp them. You can find them on www.meetup.com. And I think the next one is August 6th at 6 p.m. in Bellevue at the Maple Leaf Chinese restaurant. So if you want more information, meetup.com, and that's the Freethinkers United Network.
Yeah.
And if you want to have, if you are an I know we've done this before, but let's keep doing it. If you're an atheist, agnostic, or free thought group in the state of Washington and you'd like to get some props here on the air, please email us at, and you can find our email address at www.askanatheist.tv. And of course, all of our archive shows are there, and pretty soon we're going to have an update to the website. So we just saw some screenshots today, and it's going to be pretty exciting.
Yeah, it actually, a majority of our emails tend to come from people who want to know where the podcast is.
And right.
So just know that you have Sam successfully running around freaking out over this. So
right.
Yes.
No, we're slowly sort of spinning up to having a respectable media, like internet media project.
We're not respectable yet?
I think we're sub-respectable.
We're disreputable.
That's exactly where we want to be right now.
Okay.
So do you think we should move right into news stories?
Oh, some news that stuff? Works. We can do news stories.
So I think you got the first one, and the most exciting one of the week, I think.
Yeah, this is exciting. This actually is a bit of a chocolate peanut butter thing for me. You know, two things that I love to talk about coming together. The Westboro Baptist Church, famous for protesting military funerals, and the first successful implementation of live-action internet trollery. They are going to protest San Diego Comic-Con this year.
Oh, I really want to be there.
I would love to be at San Diego Comic-Con, period. But the fact that they're going to be there, too, they're probably going to be some of the... Actually, less one of the more interesting costume character shows going on at...
I would like to go there just dressed up as one of the four members of the Village People and have assless chaps on and just dance around in front of them. I think just really shoving it in their face, you know, that'd be fantastic.
I think they have a lot of assless chaps shoved in their face over the years. That's always the weird thing that I'm pushing around a paranoid, delusional person is that you just end up sort of reaffirming their paranoia that everyone is out to get them. Or instead, they're really just kind of a costume clan character. I had this actually. Sam and I were at the University Village Street Fair a few years ago, and there was one of those guys with a giant sign that said, "Repent or burn."
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I gotta get a picture taken with that guy. But I initially thought that he was going to say no. Because, I mean, if I was out there among the unwashed heathens, you know, screaming that they're going to go to hell and making sure I have a giant sign to rub it in, I would have simply assumed that anyone who asked to take a picture with me is doing it to make fun of me. Because, I mean, you're in a group of people that everyone disagrees with you, and I'd have to assume, okay, this is a trick or a trap of some kind.
Right.
And Sam basically said, no, these guys is here for attention.
Right.
And yeah. There was, like, no resistance. I walked up, and he's in the middle of an argument with just some random person about, you know, something biblical, and he was telling them that they were just going to go to hell.
Right.
And I just said, hi, can I have my picture taken with you? And he just goes, oh, sure. I mean, he's screaming from, you know, oh, you're going to hell, you're going to hell.
Right.
And immediately, oh, yeah, I'll have my picture taken with you. And, I even asked him to turn it around to the sign that says repent or burn, because I thought it would make a more interesting photograph.
Well, in that instance, you know, just for all of our atheist freethinkers out there, don't feed the trolls, even the live-action one. Don't do it. It's never a good idea.
But I guess this is what they were basically saying on their website. They said that Comic-Con represents idolatry.
Sure.
He says, if these people would spend even some of the energy that they spend on these comic books reading the Bible, well, no high hopes there. And I just find it funny. I actually think there's better moral values you could get out of any comic book, at least ones not written by, like, Frank Miller. I think Frank
Anything
Miller...
Anything from Sin City, probably not.
Well, I think Frank probably. Miller, the stuff he writes generally has the same tone as the Old Testament in a lot of ways. But I guess he was saying at some point, it says, the destruction of this nation is imminent, so start calling on Batman and Superman now and see if they can pull you from the mess you've created with all your silly idolatry.
It feels like if the destruction is imminent, then why not just live it up? Like,
yeah.
Then why not have the most immoral life possible?
That's what I find so funny is he's asking us to call upon two other fictional characters, Superman and Batman, and I would also make the argument that they're also morally superior than the God of the Bible, simply because Superman will save you whether you believe in him or not.
That's true.
It isn't like, you know, and the other thing too is that he's not like Superman created the trap with Lex Luthor or the parasite or whatever himself and then promise to protect you from it as part of some protection racket. Like, oh, well, it looks like you're in trouble with this trap that I created myself. Who can save you from it?
Well, even Batman as a character, he has to go through many wrenching moral quandaries about whether or not he should save or should not, or should kill or should not. Like, if more characters in the Old Testament had the restraint that Batman did about wanting to murder someone or kill someone for justice, then I think the Old Testament probably would have been a lot more readable.
Yeah.
A lot more readable text.
It's like the equivalent would be if Batman actually broke the Joker out of Arkham Asylum himself and set him loose on some family and then, hey, I'm here to save you. I mean, it's just a giant scam, but I find it hilarious that these guys...
Well, there's going to be a counter-protest, to be sure. I mean, there always is, and this time there's enough people that can who like tongue-in-cheek sort of...
You don't mess with nerds.
Flash mobs.
They're going to be out there. I mean, it turns into just a simple game of poke the crazy people with a stick and giggle. I mean, that's what they're going to get. They might not get the screaming renunciations they get at military funerals, but...
Well.
Oh, they're hilarious.
Yeah. No, I think they'll be laughed out like they are before, but...
I mean, more so with this crowd.
So the second piece of news is, and I forgot to print it up and bring it with me, but you and I read it and talked about it. So essentially, the Vatican has... It's renewed an edict about what it thinks about ordaining women into the Catholic Church. And they basically said, given that they're now, and they have been mired in their pedophilia scandal, they basically said, well, if there's anyone who tries to ordain a woman into the Catholic Church, they should be excommunicated immediately. Basically,
immediately
they should be dropped from church support. So basically this puts women priests just below raping children in the hierarchy of things that are done wrong, because you know, with if you're a pedophile priest, then they don't excommunicate you; they just kind of shuffle you away to another, you know, to another parish. And
there actually was one instance where there was a priest who wasn't punished at all, simply because he refused to accept his punishment. And it's like, wow, that's all you had to do?
Yeah.
Well, I don't accept this. Imagine saying that to a cop.
Right. Well, but I mean, do you think they have any ground whatsoever to basically not immediately excommunicate someone who's found to be sexually abusing little children? Do they have any justification whatsoever?
I don't understand why you don't just immediately drag them to a police station. I mean, that's what any decent person would do. I just find it really funny that they say this is just as bad as pedophilia, yet they have swifter punishment for things like this. It's like there was that little girl who was about 9 years old a few years ago who was raped in Brazil by her stepdad. And she became impregnated, and she had an abortion. And the Catholic Church cracked in immediately to excommunicate both the abortion doctor and the little girl. None of the discussion happened with the rapist.
Right.
It's not like he was excommunicated, too. It's really funny because I think when it comes to a lot of these kind of groups that basically play morality cop, is that deep down, they generally will prosecute the fake crime over the real one almost any time.
Right.
It's the same thing with the Catholic Church saying that we're going to pull all of our support from these sorts of programs that we have for poor people for health care in Washington, D.C., simply because we don't like that the D.C. Council is accepting same-sex marriage.
Right.
Again, you know, choosing the fake crime over that, and it's like the same thing with this case of this little girl, is a number of American Catholic priests spoke out against it and were immediately shouted down by the Vatican, who just simply reasserted what Brazil said.
Right.
I mean, this is just insane.
Well, I can see we've got the number back up here again, and if what we're saying is so inflammatory to you that you just can't stand it anymore, that you need to shut us down, the number's on the screen. It's 206-421-5658. Apparently we have a phone call. Is that right? No, we do. Yes, we do.
We do.
Whoa. Should we stop the news for a little while?
Let's talk to this person on the phone.
So who do we got on the line here? Oh, well, we got to keep going a little bit until we get them. So I think the third one is, let's do your last one. Let's do Mike Adams. Let's talk about Mike Adams.
This might be a lengthy one. Mike Adams, I don't know if you know, he's actually he's a criminology professor at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington.
Wilmington.
Something you need to know about Mike Adams is that, one, he's a blowhard and a bit of a douchebag. He wrote this article on Town Hall. I don't know if you're familiar with Town Hall.
Which is not the Town Hall Seattle Town Hall.
Not Town Hall Seattle. Yeah. This is basically a right-wing religious website that they also have a magazine. And just imagine, it's like WorldNet Daily in print. And if WorldNet Daily is sort of this collection of just the stupidest, most reactionary people into one place. And this is stupid even by the internet standards. I mean, this is bad. So anyways, he wrote article.
That's pretty stupid.
That is incredibly stupid. But I would say that this is a deeper degree of stupid. Sort of there's concentric circles. This is an inner ring of stupidity. Anyways, he wrote this article on townhall.com.
Right.
And this is a response to the recent Supreme Court decision, basically saying that if you're a student group at a public university, that you can't both discriminate and accept public funds, you know, use of their facilities,
right.
Use of just about everything. I mean, being a student group on a college, you get a lot of free stuff.
Right. You basically can't institutionalize discrimination if you're accepting public money or support from public facilities.
I mean, if you want to be a group that discriminates, the best thing for you to do is just to be private. You can do it on your own dime, and there's plenty of groups that like to make you a martyr and would gladly pay for you to bring so-and-so to speak.
Right.
You just can't do it on the college.
Right.
Anyways, this guy wrote an article in response to that because this is basically the Christian Legal Society, which was a right-wing Christian group at, I believe, it was UCLA? It was in California. I remember that.
I don't know.
The Christian Legal Society actually had something written in their bylaws saying that you have to be a Christian, you can't be gay, etc., if you want to be a member of this group. That got thrown down by the Supreme Court, and this guy Mike Adams has written this tirade, which at times lapses into Dr. Doom-esque purple prose. And it begins with the phrase, "I can't stand atheists, and I plan to do something about them." Which,
Yeah.
So,
running for the hills.
Anyways, he says, "I plan to round up the students I know who are most hostile to atheism. Then I'm going to get them to find these atheist haters willing to join atheist student groups. I plan to use my fundamentalist Christian warriors to undermine the mission of every group that disagrees with me on the existence of God." And he says, "If they don't like it, they can go to hell. That's where they're going to go eventually anyway. I do not seek robust debate. I seek power over the godless heathen dissident."
Wow.
"Kneel before Zod, son of Jor-El." "Then we will seek to destroy these groups whose names are even remotely suspicious. If I see the words like atheist, agnostic, or even freethinker, I know that they are a group of godless heathens. Then we'll move in for the kill."
Right.
"And after we get rid of these heathens, we'll turn our weapons on the gays, the blacks, and the feminists."
This is.
I think that's somewhat tongue in cheek, but I think it's what I think. What's his name? Al Franken once referred to as kidding on the square. Kidding on the square is a favorite move of Glenn Beck and others, where you say something and then say, "I'm just kidding, but not really."
Right.
So, Mark, and this guy's a college professor.
No, well, I think you would never see even the most vitriolic of the atheist apologists, like Hitchens or Dawkins, you would never have them using the language of, "We'll move in for the kill," or "We'll turn our weapons."
I see power over?
Yeah, well, Well, maybe Hitchens talks. I'm never going to say that I should kill someone because their beliefs are opposed to mine. That to me is just as insane as the Taliban is.
Well, he's openly saying I don't want free speech.
Right. So we should. I think we've got this out here. We should just take this phone call now if she's still on the line. It's Kate from Seattle. Do we have you, Kate?
Kate, are you still there?
Hello. We kept her waiting a long time. Hey, Kate, are you there? Kate from Seattle? I guess not. I guess we don't have her.
Yes, we don't
have
her.
Well, let's keep moving on.
Please call back, Kate. Let's see if we can get the phone number up on the screen again.
It's
206-421-5658. We'd be happy to hear from you again, Kate.
Did you memorize that number?
I did. I did.
Okay. Okay. I guess we might have Kate again. Kate, can you hear us?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, Kate, how's it going?
Oh, very well. How about yourself?
We're doing pretty good.
Yeah. What can we do for you?
Well, I have a YouTube channel dedicated to atheism called Bionic Dance.
You're this Kate.
Yes. How's it going? Thank you for the pitch, by the way, helping us out with Boost.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So I've been having a kind of ongoing argument on my channel with other atheists about the definition of reality versus the definition of magic, whether it's religious god magic or your basic Dungeons and Dragons style.
Not for 20.
Where you actually need to have a saving throw in response to it?
Well, basically. The thing is that many of them contend that if something exists at all, we have to consider it scientific, that it's not magic. Basically, by their definition, magic can only be imaginary. But it's my contention that, with the possible exception of, say, quantum physics, which is pretty mysterious, the scientific world appears to be rational, where effect not only follows from cause, but is also related to the cause.
Right.
I would define magic as anything where effect follows from cause, but is not related to it. For example, like if I wave my hand through the air, science says I'll expend probably a fraction of a calorie and displace some air.
Right.
But if I were to wave my hand and poof, we get a chicken, and we were able to show that the chicken did not appear by any means other than my finger waving, I would define that as magic, because it's irrational rather than rational, because it makes no sense it happens anyway.
Right. As Hitchens would say, it's a suspension of the natural order. It is not a consequence of things that are happening that we just don't understand. The funny thing about magic is that magic can be... this is a great little anecdote. I was actually back home in Oregon, and I have two young nephews, and on Christmas morning we were going to dinner, and this will betray my hillbilly lineage, which is we went to a truck stop that we go to every Christmas dinner.
Oh.
And it's not because we enjoy hanging out with the truckers with the hats and everything. It's actually because it's the only restaurant that's open on that side of town. And there was a guy there who was part of the Truck Stop Ministries. Have you seen these guys? You probably haven't.
They were unreligious.
Right, they were.
In Bill Maher's movie, right?
Yeah. Yes, they were totally there. So he had he had a collar and he had a name tag on and he had a shirt that said Truck Stop Ministries. And I can tell he used this on kids before, so he did like this funny magic trick with like a rubber band in his hand. And I think I was able to actually figure out how he did it at the end. And then he basically said, he prefaced everything that he said by saying, oh, no, this is magic, this wasn't real. And then I said, and I pulled him aside and I'm like, that was great, I think I know what you're doing here. And I said, but with you saying magic is not real is like saying professional wrestling isn't real, which is the perfect ontological description for magic is that it is real. It's the people who are, Penn Jillette does magic. Magic is real. Now, the thing that you're supposed to be tricked into thinking that's actually happening, that is what's happening is not real. But magic itself is real. It's completely and totally real.
Well, as Job from Arrested Development says, illusions, Michael, not tricks. But it is trickery. I mean, that's essentially what Penn Jillette and Teller do is trickery.
Right.
That is a real problem with the definition of magic, is some people will define magic as trickery, while others, insist that we're talking more about sorcery here, about the suspension of reality. Now, I'm not saying I think that you can suspend science. I think science is all there is. But, I'm open to the idea. If someone can show me, like really show me that magic exists in terms of like sorceress magic, I'd be open-minded about it. I'd take a look.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I can't disagree with what Casey said, that if this thing was real, that if you waved your hand and a chicken appeared, and there was, he said no explanation other than that. Then there would be an it to talk about. In the end, this is kind of like when people get into arguments about whether Kirk or Picard was a better captain, that you're having hypothetical discussions about something that isn't real.
Right. We can't test it. We just can't be tested.
So nobody is going to win this argument.
Because, that's true.
Well, do you know who Jim Rose is? Jim Rose, the guy.
I know the name. Oh, yes, actually, now that you mention it, okay. Yeah, it's coming back to me. He's got that, like, a traveling road
yes.
show.
Yes, so he was very famous in the early 90s with opening for bands like Nine Inch Nails and stuff, which is why I know of him, and then I saw him here. He did this great interview with Michio Kaku, who is a physicist who does a radio show, and he has a, I don't remember, is it, Snake Oil was the name of his book, I think. And he has this great story where there was a illusionist that goes in and basically went in and did a study about, they did a study about belief, and he went in and they're at a university and they took four or five professors, and then he did some kind of illusion, and even this illusionist was able to fool these professors into thinking that something that didn't actually happen happened. And it's not because there was actually something crazy going on here. It's that even the people whose minds are the sharpest tone to be skeptical can be that weird brain failure can be tricked when something happens, when some weird little illusion happens. And you know, these physicists were actually like, wait a minute, we need to study this, not actually realizing that someone was brought in here specifically to fool them, to fool their fancy schmancy educated brains.
I think that's why a lot of these prominent skeptics, whether it's Penn and Teller, James Randi, or Harry Houdini, who is kind of like, I like to think of him as the golden age James Randi. that his arch nemesis, instead of being Uri Geller, was Arthur Conan Doyle.
Right.
I think the reason that they're skeptical is their first thought is not, oh my God, this guy has, he can shoot fire out of his hands. I mean, their first thought is, I wonder how he did that. I'd like to do that. And I think that's the sort of mentality they have.
Right.
Well, I mean, this is why on my YouTube channel, I constantly advocate empirical testing.
You can pimp that channel address if you want to.
Yeah, definitely.
We'll let you go ahead and call out the URL if you want to.
Okay, well, I mean, you know, if you just go to YouTube and type bionic dance, all one word, into the search bar, you'll find me. I've got
awesome.
Almost 200 videos. I'm about to make my 200th later today. So.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Perfect. Well,
yeah.
Thank you for calling, Caden. I appreciate the topic. Glad for the shout-out. But we need to move quite along because I don't think Mike's even got to his topic yet.
No,
absolutely. I love your show, and let's hope we get some CS callers, right?
I hope so.
Yes, yes. Thanks
all
so
right.
much, Kate.
Later.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
So, want to do some emails real
yeah,
quick?
Yeah, let's do one or two, and then I just don't want to get bogged down. So.
Oh, well, this one is a really important email.
You should.
I mean, this is the most important email.
We've never got an important email more important
I mean,
than
this. This tops getting an email from the president himself. We have an email from Yahweh.
Of course.
Who
it's
actually
amazing.
Has his email in lord.yahweh777.
Right.
So,
and I was saying earlier, if he actually was the creator of the universe, why wasn't he able to get to this...
just Lord Yahweh.
Yeah, just Yahweh at.
Why yeah.
wasn't he, I don't know.
You think there would have been a yahweh.com. He would have had his own...
He would have registered it in 1996 instead.
Yeah,
of,
seriously. Yeah. He would have foreseen this and just... Who
yeah,
knows?
Go ahead.
But, you know, maybe it's the same problem that he can't, you know, you still have to mark the doors. I mean, he's not perfect. You throw an iron chariot at him and you feed him. It's like he's kryptonite.
Yeah, it is.
This is an email from Yahweh. Right. Dear atheists, as the main deity of the Judo-Christian faith, Judo-Christian.
J-U-D-O.
That's, I believe, a more defensive style of Christianity, involving more blocks and throws. I decided to roll with the times and make my presence known. And by the way, my is also capitalized, known on the internet. Because clearly there isn't enough religion on the internet.
Sure.
I made a channel on YouTube, but seemed to mainly get atheists to watch me. My question, therefore, is what proof would you need to accept me, also capitalized, into your hearts? And therefore, and why Christians fail to subscribe? One, I think, probably because you're not real. both as an idea and as a being. Mr. Poe. But
yeah.
I would say that...
Little Poe here.
Yeah, that's Big Poe.
No, and he signs it God on the end.
He signs it
G-O-D.
God. G-O-D. I'm going to assume that Judo-Christianity, since he's an inerrant being, is probably intentional, because Yahweh sometimes likes to cut vowels out of things. But
yeah.
I would say, what proof would you take? I would say you'd have to manifest in some way. Give me something to look at and study. Don't just simply try to argue yourself into existence and define yourself into existence with weird little choose your own adventure games.
I actually challenge God, if he is really a judo master, he should do a hip throw right now, right on my back. Come on. Come on.
A special effects budget. You can get more than a hip throw. I think you can get a Hadouken.
Yes.
Yeah. I think something really major. Obviously, probably one of those crazy Street Fighter Tour multiple hits.
Sure, yeah. Things. It's got a 13-hit combo or
13
something.
13-hit combo. I don't get
777-hit combo.
I think you don't need to be a martial artist to hit somebody 13 times in a row and win. I bet you that if somebody didn't fight back 13 times in a row, I think I would have won that fight.
Yeah. Well, what else do we got here? Oh, this one is actually interesting. So the first time I was on the show, I made this call out to Matt Dillahunty, who is his atheist, heretic, apostate decadency. I don't know what his name is.
Yeah, he's the host.
I don't know his title, but we should give you a better title than that. Someone, a guy named Charlie, said that he likes
the challenges real quick.
Oh, the challenge again. Basically, I wanted to challenge the Atheist Experience, who was certainly they were on before us, but we want to settle once and for all which show is the better show. And so we've called out Matt Dillahunty to have a one-on-one Street Fighter II HD Turbo remix.
That's a great segue. Over,
yeah, it's awesome. Over Xbox Live, we've sort of coordinated. We're gonna have actually a live streaming event going on here,
mm-hmm.
Which will be sometime in the near future.
I know that I talked to Matt through Facebook a bit, and actually his initial reaction to this challenge was, "Oh, this is gonna be trouble," because he did nothing but play Street Fighter II while he was serving in the Gulf,
right, where he's birthed in Kuwait or whatever.
So it was just you know, it was gonna be painful for Casey. That's before he mentioned Casey was a world champion. Then Matt mentioned that he'd actually downloaded it and hadn't played in a really long time.
Right.
But and then he also didn't like the way the controller felt. And actually, this guy has a really good, I think a good suggestion to sort of offset this.
Yeah, he wrote in about the spirituality, which we're going to talk about a little bit later. But his first was, he said, "I find it unfair to challenge Matt to a game that one of you happens to be very good at." Well, to be fair, he did say he was really good at it.
Yeah.
"I suggest then that you play the requested SF game, a game of Matt's choice and a choice from the fans. You could do a poll on your page to increase traffic, yada, yada, yada." So we do know that Matt is awesome at Guitar Hero, and I stink at Guitar Hero. So we might be able to do both. We might be able to have maybe me to do some like licks on like a David Bowie song and see who can... I'm sure he'll...
Maybe Hot Cross Buns.
I'm sure he'll kick my ass, but we wanted to open it up, and of course, you elevated the challenge by having a Pat Robertson audiobook as the prize.
Well, it's not an audiobook. When he ran for president in 1988 on, I believe, the Nutball party ticket, he actually released something. It was called an audio cassette tape that I had gotten off of YouTube called "What I Shall Do as President" by Pat Robertson. And sadly, I don't know if you know this, but Pat Robertson actually won the Republican primary in Washington State.
Really?
In 1988.
He was much less of a crazy asshat that back then than
he
is now,
just as much. He was just seen as less of a crazy asshat back then. He actually had political influence at one point. Now he's just a clown that rolls out with crazy stuff every so often.
Now he's a clown who bench presses 2,000 pounds.
Yeah, he's about as strong as Spider-Man.
I was going to say, I don't want to tangle with Pat Robertson if he really can bench press a car.
He can. So
prove it, Pat. Prove it.
But as to the challenge, I'm all for this. I'd say maybe a game of Street Fighter II, then Guitar Hero or Rock Band. I know that he's really big on those.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe something leave it up to the viewers. What game would you like to see Casey take on Matt with?
Yeah, www.askanatheist.tv. You guys can give us your suggestions and what have you.
I think it's a good idea. I'd like to see what you guys would do.
Yeah, I don't know. It would probably be something that I wasn't terribly good at, but, you know.
I don't know. You good at Super Mario Kart? That's always been the one I'm good at.
Yeah, and then also, I guess we just had the phone number up there again. If anyone wants to call back in, we're still accepting phone calls.
Yeah, give us a call, 206-421-5658.
I'm going to let you do it because you've memorized it.
I've memorized the number because I'm a professional.
Maybe we should go on to the next, what do you got?
You have another email, marriage one.
Let's see. Do we want to do the marriage one?
Do the marriage one because you're actually married.
This is one that I'm actually... Inexplicably, I'm actually married. Her atheists get married? Who knew?
Shocking.
So Christian Ruano, and he's from Guatemala, apparently, so we do have a pretty international audience, very international audience. And his email goes, "Since I became an atheist and all of my preconceived ideas about much things change, I was wondering, when the time came that I got married arrived, what kind of ceremony should one do? You see on the movies and TV, the ideal of the perfect life is to get married. a couple leaving a church, people throwing rice at them. So I think you get the idea. So this is, what would, in your mind, what would be the proper ceremony for a couple who don't believe in such things? And I basically told him, I said...
He doesn't believe in rice?
He clearly doesn't believe in throwing rice. Neither do I. I told him what I would tell anyone who is interested, who has someone that they love, who has someone that they want to be committed to, who finds the ceremony still valuable, which is, you can chuck out all of the things that have anything to do with sanctifying it before God, with having it in a church or before a priest. That none of that matters. All that really matters is what you and the person you're marrying want to do. And I hope this also extends to people who are of the same sex as well, not just a man and a woman. But there's, in America at least, I said, on my experience, that you don't actually have to have a priest marry you. You can be a judge or some civil servants have the ability
Justice
to do
of the
it.
Peace.
Justice of the peace. If you're a ship captain, I don't know, there are ship captains in Guatemala, I would imagine. They can sign a marriage certificate. Or in this country, of course, anyone can be ordained by the Universal Life Church, which is whom I was married by. And as for the ceremony and where it is, get married wherever you want to. We got married on a boat. Get married in your backyard. Get married in the hills. Get married, on the beach. Just do something that is special and incredible to you.
Yeah, get married on a train. Get married on a plane.
Well, and then also the last bit there, which is, well, what about the ceremony? Because a lot of the connections between marriage and the whole ceremony is that it's religious. It's like, well, this is God sanctifying our union. Make it whatever you want to.
Yeah.
If you want to get married, make it about love. Make it about, as my friend who got married this summer, make it about role-playing games, because he made his marriage about role-playing games. Make it about anything you want to, just make it your own, and don't worry about what other people think, and don't worry about what you see on the TV and movies, because that's all
TV and movies.
Hokum nonsense anyways.
Yeah, awesome.
That's it.
Yeah. So I guess we're going to jump right into our topic.
Yeah.
This is something that had been rattling around my head for about 6 months, and I thought it was worth doing a show about, and it's a question of, does spiritualism as a word have any tangible value whatsoever? And I've come to the conclusion that it doesn't. I want to first toss out there, I am not a linguist. I am not somebody who has...
You're not a cunning linguist?
I am not a cunning linguist. I'm not somebody who knows all of the technical terms for any of this. I'm not going to pretend to be Noam Chomsky and bring out the history of this or that word. I'm not going to pretend to do that. So you can save yourself the angry emails where you correct my verbiage. So I guess for me, I thought about what is language, what is the value of a word, and for me, a word has value if there's a basic consensus on what the definition of that word is. So
right.
If I say table, I'm basically talking about any elevated flat surface. So even though you may think of a very different table, you may think of an operating table or a writing desk, or even a gurney, whatever, we still have that same basic operative definition, the same way I could say dog, you may think of a shaggy dog, I may think of a dachshund.
Mm-hmm.
But there's this still basic classification. The word spiritual just simply doesn't have that. And there are even words, this is a real problem that we have even in our political discourse. Like, for instance, the way that the words fascism, socialism, and communism sort of around sort of haphazardly. Usually sloppery. Honestly, they tend to just mean some sort of pejorative for somebody you don't like politically.
Sure.
When these words actually do have very specific definitions. And I would also say the word theory is used in this way, too. And this is something that I myself have tried to correct myself on. A lot of people tend to use the word theory sort of interchangeably with the word opinion, like, oh, that's just your theory. And this is something that I know that I don't want to help contribute to. I don't want this to be something where the word theory has a very specific scientific definition about the ability for somebody to make an accurate model that they can use to make a reliable predictions with.
Right.
This is something you can use as a backdrop for other discoveries. That's not how a lot of people use it. So I try to correct myself and not use the word theory in any method any definition other than the strictly scientific one.
Right. And that's and that's for people who are interested in linguistics, it's called equivocation, right?
Equivocation.
Where there is actually, whether it's two actual divergent meanings of exactly the same word, such that there's a confusion in terms of what the person is saying when they mean one and or might mean the other. And then there is something involved with equivocation that has to do with just a very slight misinterpretation or malinterpretation, I guess you could say, of exactly the same concept. So that's really where we run into with spiritual, right? Because
I talked about the word like God, where people have very different definitions, but there's much more of a consensus on what God means to most people, that people can interpret it very differently. You can have Pat Robertson's God or Desmond Tutu's God,
right.
But in the end, both of them are talking about basically the same thing, which is a being or force with some sort of divine power that's usually, for the most part, most people tend to think of it as a personal interventionist being either responsible for the creation or maintenance of the universe in some way, or the world, or anything like that, or even just a certain venue in the world. You know, like, you know, Poseidon is in charge of the sea.
Right.
And here's the thing, is that even on the subject of words like God, you have people who are, you know, woo-woo merchants like Deepak Chopra, who Sam Harris called him out on an intelligence, was it an Intelligence Squared, or which, was
I
it a big
know.
Think debate? I know, he had a bit had a debate
yeah,
with him much and some other woo merchant, and he called him out on his use of the word God, that that Deepak Chopra had a very specific one, and whenever you called out the definition of how people actually believed in a God, he would say, oh, that's not the God I'm talking to. I'm trying to move the goalposts here.
Right.
He would say, no, I'm talking, that's the God of the past. You know, it's just ignoring the fact that that's the God that most people tend to believe in by any poll that we've ever done. It's a personal interventionist being that cares about whether you masturbate.
Right.
Sam Harris called him out saying that he was being inherently dishonest, saying that you are being happily misunderstood, that you're using this very specific term and allowing people to project that term upon you.
Mm-hmm.
This has always been, that's why it's important for us as atheists, though, when we talk to somebody who believes in a God, to specifically ask what they mean so that we're not just talking past each other. And a vast majority of the world does believe in this sort of interventionist personal God.
Sure.
And I think it's important that you first ask that question first rather than just assume it so that you don't
What use? I mean, that's so true, and I don't even know how you could, I don't know why you would get to a point where you would slough that off, because what are gods useful for if you can't appeal to them to help you out? Or appeal for them not to cause an earthquake to destroy your village. Like, what use would a god be at all if he wasn't interventionist?
Yeah, that's, you know? It doesn't make a lot of sense. This is where I come to the word spiritual. I would contend that this is a nonsense word. It's a bunch of bunk, a bunch of malarkey, and that it lacks any sort of definitional consensus, and that literally you have a different definition for every single person you ask, and there isn't that sort of bottom line foundational understanding. There isn't a dog or table sort of basic concept that everyone is drawing off of. And this comes to my biggest disagreement with my favorite of the so-called new atheists, which is Sam Harris. He uses the word pretty extensively, and I think he tends to use it in sort of a taking the word back sort of sense.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's an it to take back. I think that though he isn't intentionally being misunderstood, I think he may be inadvertently causing misunderstanding with his use of this word.
Yeah.
I know that he may be unintentionally doing what Deepak Chopra does in a very dishonest, intentional way. So I guess we're going to go through some of the definitions that we have. We actually did solicit definitions from people over the internet and through the show.
Right.
And I want to actually look at some of these definitions, and we can see, is there any real consensus here? And two, does this definition actually make sense in any way?
We should also let our audience know, too, that if they have a definition of spiritual that's not being read here in the emails or mischaracterized by us, you can give us a call, 206-421-5658.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right. but you read that one off the screen. So the first major definition I've found of the word spiritual is just a synonym for religious. And this is the one that's used by traditional religious leaders, sometimes a lot of fundamentalists. So when Billy Graham has said that he's the unofficial spiritual advisor to the President of the United States, that's not what he's meaning. There's no differentiation. It's just using the same, it's like, you know, blue and azure or whatever.
Sure.
Just using two words, you know, that mean basically the same concept, so you're not using the same word over and over again. That's why you hear things like spiritual leaders, spiritual advisors. They're generally talking about very traditional people in very hierarchical faiths that have the same category you would call religion.
Mm-hmm.
The other one I found is spiritual is a euphemism for religion. This is folks that don't like the connotation of the word religion because it conjures images of, you know, witch burnings or Pat Robertson, Osama bin Laden. Oh, those people are religious.
Right. It's this, it's the spiritual, not religious.
Yeah. The other thing is they really are still religious. They just don't like the word. These are still people who have very traditional beliefs in that way. They still go to church. They still sometimes even very conservative beliefs. But they just don't like that word. And that's where you get this group of people who like to use goofy terms like, I'm not a Christian, I'm a Christ follower. It's a distinction without a difference. And it's basically saying that, we're the true Scotsman. That's essentially what it is. If you're not familiar with it, the no true Scotsman fallacy is, right. It's when somebody makes a general statement about all of one group. Like, the one in the example is that no true Scotsman puts sugar on his porridge. Oh, but that guy puts sugar on his porridge. Well, he's not a true Scotsman.
Right. He's the exception that proves the rule, as they say.
So it's like they don't like the category. They don't like being put into a box with people that may potentially embarrass them. So instead, they create a separate box. And this is sort of similar to what the Bush administration did when they didn't like the legal connotations of the words prisoner of war.
Right.
So they just manufactured one called enemy combatant. And it's basically the same thing. But here's the thing. Atheists do this, too. We're not immune to this kind of nonsense. As that the word atheist has these negative connotations that we are trying to take back, that people use it sort of interchangeably with somebody who doesn't believe in any meaning in their life. And atheists have come up with a big lame example, and it's called brights. And I know that some of our viewers may call themselves bright, in which case I would say you're a big dummy for doing that.
You're going to get those atheists really upset
now. I'm sorry,
all those brights.
Bright. It's like, how could a term be both so dainty and mincing and so arrogant and obnoxious at the same time?
Yeah.
And at the same time, so nondescriptive.
I like you, probably just find that to be not the right word. I mean, what's wrong with atheist? It's pretty straight.
Everyone,
it's pretty upfront about what it is that you believe.
Yeah, they said, we don't believe in a god or gods. I mean, that's that simple. People sort of know that word. But I don't like that, so I'm going to make up a word. And I know that there are some people who do that with the word agnostic.
Right. I would also hate that the moniker that we use to identify ourselves, also to have built in it that everyone who's not us is an ignorant asshole.
You know?
Like, that's not the way you want to sell it. Like, we're only talking about one thing and not believing one thing. We're not talking about how we're better than everyone else.
And there are dumb atheists out there. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with the Ray Aliens, which is that UFO cult out of Texas who believe that humanity was created in much the way the Celestials in Marvel Comics sort of picked people. It's basically intelligent design with sci-fi rather than fantasy elements.
Right.
But it's the same thing. I want a phrase that one is all-compassing and can be used broadly. Atheist just simply means not a theist, not somebody who believes in gods. And it's simple. It's something that encompasses a large group of people, and it doesn't involve any sort of injected, intended, or implied philosophical bent.
Right.
Here's the next one. We get into the categories I like to call spiritual and ... but not religious. Then we're talking about less dogmatic versions of largely traditional beliefs. This is where moderate religion comes in. And they like to draw this imaginary line between religion and spirituality by saying, okay, those people who are literalists, who believe this sort of thing dogmatically, those people are religious, we're spiritual. So we're more, say, tolerant of gays and women's rights and a lot of things like that. We're not as literal about things like, you know, six calendar day creation or, this rejection of evolutionary biology just outright because it contradicts us. They're a bit more willing to make concessions to reality. and that's what they say, is that religion, those guys are loons, we're spiritual. Then there's the other spiritual but not religious category, which is less organized belief. This is a la carte faith. This is where somebody basically takes a hit random on the religion button and get a bunch of crazy things sort of mixed in. They said, oh, well, religion, that's organized belief. Mine is disorganized belief, where it's sort of like I went around shopping and picked all the parts myself and built my own car rather than going to that awful dealer who wants to tell me what CD player I'm going to have in my car.
Right, and I think we actually talked about this before,
which is
a lot of Americans have these, most of them have these weird mix and match beliefs, like a majority of Americans believe in reincarnation.
Is it a majority now? I thought
yes.
a majority,
oh, yes.
like 60%
it's,
believe
it's
in hell.
It's absolutely a majority. But, you know, and most of these people will also either believe that Jesus Christ actually existed or believe that he, you know, is the
literally
Son of God.
Literally coming back?
Yes,
in like 50
literally
years.
The Son of God. But then they'll also have these weird things where, you know, they don't understand that, like, the Christian doctrine doesn't support the fact that you're going to come back as a dung beetle in your next life, you know? Like, that just doesn't happen. And it is mutually exclusive to their theology. But people just would much rather believe that they were Genghis Khan in a former life because it's more interesting to them.
Because it's Genghis Khan.
Yeah.
Dude is a badass.
Khan! No.
Okay.
Oh, wait, not that con.
Not that con. Okay. This con, I believe, didn't have a fake rubber chest. Which, actually, the producers have said that was real. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. But what we're talking about here is a hodgepodge of random religious beliefs where you have somebody who injects some pagan beliefs, some Buddhist beliefs.
Right.
Suddenly they're talking about things like karma. Sometimes even crystals and ghosts and just about anything you would see on either an episode
crystals.
Of Doctor Who or any one of the sci-fi reality shows, which pretty much plays out like an episode of Doctor Who.
Man, I just nearly dropped the F-bomb there, but it was because I wanted to say, screw you, Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah.
Sci-Fi Channel used to be for sci-fi. Now it's for cooking?
Well, it's still sci-fi.
It's S-Y-F-Y, so they don't have to care about the science.
Well, less on the science, more on the fiction. But then there's spiritual as a synonym for theism, just any belief in a higher power, something bigger than yourself. What does that even mean, bigger than yourself?
Yeah,
like Andre the Giant is bigger than me, or was bigger than... Oh, he's still bigger than me. I doubt he's decomposed that much. He's still much larger than me. Spiritualism is... Sorry, Andre, you were awesome in The Princess Bride.
Yeah, and he has a posse.
He does have a posse, Obey the Giant. And there's spiritualist belief in a soul or spirit. But spirit is another word like that. It has two definitions. There's things like, you have team spirit in the same way that soul, James Brown is a godfather of soul. But I don't think they mean in the terms that he actually has a collection of, like, spirits that float around him.
I actually think having more of a soul makes you be able to dance better.
Yeah.
Some people have less soul, like if you imagine like it's a glass, like a glass of water. Some people have more soul and they're able to dance better to, it's a man's world than people who have less soul. The glass is a little
Then
more
I got
empty.
Beliefs in any kind of supernatural phenomenon, spirits, demons, fairies, seances. This is the Arthur Conan Doyle stuff I talked about earlier. Right. Spiritual, also in the sense of just... This is the other one, too, that we get a lot. And this is the Sam Harris one, which is belief in... It's sort of this emotional... These experiences that are sort of emotional transcendence, awe, wonder, beauty, and sometimes natural phenomenon. These sort of transformative experiences that people have.
Right. And that's actually one area in which, Mike, I'm blissfully happy to diverge with you on this point, because it's... I understand... So Sam Harris, and I think this... We kind of... A crux of this goes down to the fact that there's someone among who speaks for us atheists who, like, really believes that there's something left to this word spiritual, essentially. And, of course, his is he's like the guy who, I went and did meditation for 6 months or something because I wanted to get some sense of the experience that these people were talking about. And then he says, well, we don't want to abandon the playing field of being able to define this realm of things that are spiritual to the people who we think are crazy wackos who believe in invisible things in the sky. Where I think we differ is that you'd say it's not worth saying anything about because there are too many differences in opinion, basically.
Yeah.
And both you and I agree that a concept of spiritual, like an idea of spiritual, at the very least, since we don't believe in anything that's immaterial, I think the idea of a spiritual is a feeling, And, I always say to Christians who say, well, don't you ever experience anything that's spiritual? And I said, well, I don't believe there's a spirit, but I have felt things you could call spiritual because I would say the first time that I saw Carl Sagan's Cosmos, I had the most intense feeling of, like, wonder and awe and, it's a television show, but still.
Yeah.
That, like, an amazing feeling of this pervasive feeling of being like, this is amazing how small and insignificant I am, but how significant my insignificance should be to me. And I think it's valuable to be able to talk in those terms, but while also, qualifying necessarily that when I say spiritual, I don't mean that it has to do anything with a part of me that's not material, because there's no part of me that's not material. It's all in here.
Yeah, that's, I guess my disagreement with you on that is that it's the word spiritual. It's not necessarily anything else. I agree with everything else you said. I think there's something to be learned, especially at the level of the brain, on all of these experiences.
Right.
I think there's something really important to... And it's something that's sort of this experience that ties us all together.
Like the force?
I'm all for that. This sort of shared experience that we can all. I also agree that there a lot of people tend to project supernatural ideas on these basic experiences.
Right.
I just don't like the word spiritual because if you use that word, you're in the minority of people who do think that there is a supernatural element to that, and you end up inadvertently creating a misunderstanding. Oh, we have a phone call.
Ooh, let's do it.
Joe from Des Moines. Joe, what can you got for us today?
Yes. Don't you think that perhaps spiritualist points of view are much like a child with a teddy bear. It gives you comfort.
But I think, aside from comfort, I think there's a certain value in the truth, that I can feel comfort from telling somebody a lie, but I think that people are big boys. They can handle reality, and I think it's sort of condescending to say that, oh, well, they take comfort from that. I'm not saying I'm going to rip it away and throw down their lollipop and laugh at them, but...
Well, but from the perspective and the paradigm of, in crises, there is a need for comfort, and they find comfort much like a child would with a teddy bear.
Well, that's Joe, that's fine for me. People can find comfort in whatever beliefs they want to. Just don't talk about it being true.
Yeah.
You can believe whatever you want to if it makes you feel good. Just don't say anything to me about that there's some kind of objective truth to it. Don't say that because it, you know, this has to do with my soul and it's good for my soul, this thing that's immaterial that'll live on forever. You believe whatever you want to, but leave truth out of it, because when you enter the realm of truth, that's when we can actually talk about it. So as far as being comforted, people can believe whatever they want to. You can be as deluded as you want to and be comfortable, and I'm perfectly willing for them to keep that. It's just, let's actually, if we want to talk about truth, let's talk about truth. Let's not talk about feelings.
At least give something demonstrable, something that we can actually look at and study. I mean, yeah, you get comfort from it, but you can get comfort from anything. I could manufacture a lie right now that's incredibly comforting,
right,
but it has no value in truth. And for me, I care about whether the things that I believe are true, if they correspond with reality in any way. So I'd say it's far more comforting to me that this can actually be proven, rather than it's something that I can just repeat to myself like a mantra.
Right. And I think, Joe, where the unfortunate part where we're in our country is the fact that most people buy into this sense of this other definition of spiritualism and all of these related religious concepts, and they really care more about those being maintained than they care about having an actual honest discussion about what is extant and what is not, what exists and what doesn't.
And there are people who actually legislate based on these
right.
beliefs as well. I mean, and sometimes it becomes a gateway to even having political power. I mean, there's actually a Republican primary that was happening earlier this year where two people were both literalist conservatives were arguing over who believed in the literal truth of the Bible more than the other person, and who was more anti-evolution than the other person.
Right.
And these are things that affect all of us. And one of the big reasons we have this show, I think it's important for us who don't believe any of this malarkey to have a voice and to simply say, no, before we talk about this or that soul as it pertains to something like stem cell research or gay rights, how about you actually prove the efficacy of your claims?
Right. Well, we should actually, this is a good, ask this, we haven't done this, is, Joe, what is it that you believe?
Well, I've read Kersey Graves, I've read Sir Godfrey Higgins, I've read the 1560 version of the Geneva Bible.
Well, I mean, aside from what you've read, instead of giving us a bibliography, how about you summarize it for us?
Well...
I mean, if you had to give like in a sentence or so what your belief system essentially is.
My belief system is very simple. I'm a polytheist. There's many gods I don't believe in. But I enjoy your show, and carry on.
Oh, all right. Okay. Thank you, Joe.
Oh, you're the first polytheist that we've had. Thanks so much, Joe. Have a good afternoon.
You too.
Actually, let's just throw in a reminder. We're not going to, for anyone who's tuned in late, we're not actually going to the Rams. You can't come and have drinks with us. But afterwards, we're going to the Seattle Atheists, maybe Joe, you can show up, the Seattle Atheists July membership meeting on the Stone Soup Theater. That is 4035 North Stone Way. Is that in Fremont? I don't even know. Well, it's on Stone Way. You could probably find it if you Google mapped or what have you. So come there, and Harry Gilbert is talking about dark matter, so it should be, for all of you nerds out there, should be pretty awesome, I think.
It's all over my head, so. I thought we have some time left. Let's actually go over some of the emails that we got.
Right, well,
people were talking about what is their definition.
Let's shoot down some email, shall we?
Some of them I found some interesting is that... one of them, it says, as I see it, however, spirituality is the belief in something beyond the realm of the normal and scientific, be it other kin, afterlife, meditation, psychics, or any other similar belief. I see spirituality as a connection of some form of mysticism or otherwise scientifically questionable concept. The key difference, yeah. So, I mean, that's essentially one of the belief in sort of anything right. generally
oh,
supernatural.
It's, oh, it's mystery.
And yeah, this is my favorite snarky email that we got from an atheist about spiritual. Spiritual, a multifaceted word used not to convey a single well-defined concept for the purpose of communication, but to represent one's pathological disinterest in the real world and to communicate it to others to create an in-group connection.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, that's really laying it all out there on the table.
Yeah, that doesn't hold back. That has a touch of Hitchens in it.
Yeah.
Basically, it says, the way I see, I've used the word, the most adequate definition would be the concept of one's consciousness of being part of something beyond what we see as the natural. Now, the word actually has its roots in the definition of or pertaining right. to the spirit.
Right, and that has been consistently, and if we don't just talk about atheism, you know, we're also skeptics. So we also don't believe that you have, you know, ghosts going around and knocking things over in your haunted house. Like if things exist beyond the material, prove it.
Yeah.
If ghosts actually do knock stuff over, if poltergeists knock stuff over in your house, there would be a way to prove that. And obviously, all you need to do is watch any of the spin-offs of the Ghost Hunters to see how incredibly lame those are as a
yeah,
proof for ghosts.
And really, if you have eternal life and you basically get to wander around the corporeal realm, can't you do something better than just knock crap over? I mean, really?
Right.
This is the extent that you're just going to be kind of a semi-annoying
right.
dick?
Well, sometimes ghosts rape people, apparently. This I've heard from Unsolved Mysteries.
Why would a yeah. ghost still have any kind of sexual
I don't know.
Desire whatsoever?
I don't know.
You don't even have a body anymore, and the body's where those desires come from. I mean, even Christians say that. Aren't you, like, supposed to be sexless in heaven?
I just love that episode of Bullshit where they were talking about ghosts, and they said, why are they always wearing clothes? And so behind Penn and Teller, they just got a room full of naked people wandering around going like zombies. It was just great. It's like, why aren't ghosts naked?
Yeah, and why do they have to play games of 20 questions with, you know, jerk-offs like, you know, what's his name, Van Prague and John Edward? They're like, oh, we got a word? Sounds like... Right.
Sounds like, unfortunately, yeah. the end of the show.
Sounds like the end of the show.
Oh, guys. All right. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can join us. AskAnAtheist.tv is our website. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next week.